Welcome to City Talks, a monthly podcast looking at the big issues facing UK cities and the latest thinking in urban policy. I'm your host, Andrew Carter, from the think tank Centre for Cities. I hope you enjoy the episode. Welcome to this edition of City Minutes. Today, I'm joined by my colleagues, Guilherme Rodriguez and Anthony Breach, to talk about their recent report called Measuring Up, Comparing Public Transport in the UK and Europe's Biggest Cities. Welcome to you both. So the report not only compares the extent of the transport networks of the UK's biggest cities outside London with their equivalent cities in Western Europe, it also looks at how big British and European cities compare on density. In other words, how many people live close to the city centre and the implications this has for future transport investment. Anthony, let's start with you, and we're not going to start with transport. We're actually going to start with how our European cities are planned and built and how this compares to UK cities. So how does it compare? What are the differences? What are the similarities? And what are some of the reasons behind it?
So the main difference that we see between European cities and big British cities in terms of their built form is that European cities have a much more mid-rise built form than British cities. So there's many more kind of mid-rise apartments, those kind of Euro blocks, that's how they're sometimes called, not just within the urban core of European cities, but then also into kind of the fringe of the core and also into the suburbs as well. And these mid-rise apartment blocks may be rising to 5 or 6 stories, which you'll see if you go on a city break to Milan or to Barcelona or to Berlin, are just a kind of urban form which doesn't really exist in the UK, outside of perhaps kind of Glasgow or Edinburgh or a few other select cities, where instead in the UK, our big British cities are characterised by lots of terraced housing and semi-detached housing. That means that as cities get larger, they don't get denser, that we don't see kind of larger cities sharing land more efficiently than smaller cities. And it seems to be the case that the reason for this is that while European countries often have zoning systems for their planning systems, so rules-based systems where developers can build so long as they follow the rules, which makes it easier to redevelop urban land and to build up and provide mid-rise housing if people want it. The UK is an unusually discretionary system with lots of case-by-case decision-making, and which makes it hard to build that kind of mid-rise urban form.
Okay, so our British cities are particularly less dense near the urban core than our European cities, and there's a sort of system effect that is playing in on that. Guilherme, just talk us through the transport consequences of this sort of pattern of urban form that we see in UK cities, and again, compare that to our European cities.
So the urban form, as Anthony said, makes that British cities don't have much residents next to the places with a better public transport network. In some cities like Leeds and Manchester, we do in fact see that the total area covered in 30 minutes by public transport, it's smaller than their counterparts, but that's not a common feature. Places like Newcastle, Glasgow, and Birmingham, the area itself covered by public transport, it's not that small, it's comparable and sometimes even larger than some of its peers, but it doesn't have enough people living around. And that basically explains why in Europe, almost 9 out of 10 people can reach their city center in 30 minutes, while the number is much smaller in UK cities, around 4 people out of 10.
So it's not just the extent of the transport system. Actually, as you were saying, it's the numbers of people that are living close to or within the confines of the of that transport system. Compare, just give us some numbers on Manchester and Milan, just to give us a sense of that.
So Manchester and Milan, they have more or less the same area covered by public transport in 30 minutes. That said, Manchester, it's not able to catch as much workers and residents as Milan. Milan, I think, has around twice as many residents in their core area than Manchester. And the main reason for that is, as Anthony said, there's a lot of mid-rise in Milan, and it doesn't exist that much in Manchester and other cities. It's very rare to see dense pockets next to public transport, except in London.
And so, you know, there's a lot of debate and discussion in the levelling up agenda more broadly about, you know, significance of transport as being a key part of that agenda. And in the budget and spending review that we had in late October 21, the government pledged a lot of money, nearly 7 billion, I think, or around 7 billion for transport-related investment in infrastructure in some of our big cities. Is this needed? Are we saying that it isn't needed, or are we saying that it is needed?
It is needed, Andrew. It is. The 7 billion are more than welcome, especially because the investments commit mostly to the largest areas, the ones that we focus on this paper, around 5.7 million for city regions. And we know from previous research that some of these systems, public transport systems, have some problems that need to be tackled, and they mostly need integration. And this money should help them in integration. On top of that, involving the combined authorities in the process should also be seen as a positive step. However, public transport alone is unlikely to solve our problems, as we said. So European-style transport systems will not deliver European-style outcomes without European-style urban form. So also in the budget, the Chancellor announced 18 billion for houses in brownfield lands, but unfortunately, we are not sure that these two announcements are going to be tied together. And that will be key to make most of each pound invested in public transport is guaranteeing that we have as many people living around it as possible.
So to take the example of Leeds and Marseille, two cities with a similar population, Leeds famously is the largest city in Europe without a metro. And we can see from the analysis that Leeds does have lower public transport accessibility than Marseille. So while 87% of people in Marseille can access the city centre by public transport in 30 minutes, only 38% of people in Leeds can do the same. But simply laying more trams and more tracks won't close that gap alone. So less than half the gap between Leeds and Marseille would be closed if Leeds had the same area of network covered by public transport as Marseille does. And actually most of the gap, kind of 26% of that public transport accessibility comes from the fact that Leeds is simply less dense than Marseille, that it has a much more low-rise urban form, which means people are forced to live far away from public transport and therefore cannot access the city centre with all the benefits to wages, to productivity that city centre locations bring.
So there's a commitment that we would want to see from the government, which actually integrates different decisions that it's made or different announcements it's made, in particular in relation to transport and housing, making sure that we bring those two things together. Anthony, coming back to you, you know, thinking sort of within places, I suppose, what do we want to see happen to maximise the transport investment that we'll see in Greater Manchester or in the West Midlands or, you know, in the Liverpool City region? What else do we want to see happen to make the most of that investment?
So to really make the most of this investment in public transport, we need to be thinking of ways to make the city centre of these big cities more accessible to not just future urban residents of these big cities, but also to existing residents as well. And that can only be done not just through laying more trams and more tracks, but also to changing the built form, as Guillaume just mentioned. And the way that the only way in which that can be achieved is by changing the nature in which we regulate development and our planning system and how we control development as well. So we're saying that alongside this transport investment, the government should be pursuing kind of the planning reforms which they set out last year in their planning white paper. There's still some uncertainty about what exactly those would look like, but it does seem to be that we'll have a more rules-based process by the end of this, by the end of these reforms, which would be very welcome. But even before that, local councils can use local development orders to inject a bit more rules-based development into their local plans, into their development process. And we're saying that it shouldn't just be that local development order should be applied around new stations, a new investment that's coming on stream, but also that local development orders should be applied around existing stations and existing networks to make the most of the infrastructure that our big cities already have.
Thank you both. You can find the full report and all the related analysis and write-in on our website, centreforcities.org. Thanks for listening to City Minutes.
Thank you for listening to this episode of City Talks, brought to you by Centre for Cities. You can find us on iTunes and Stitcher by searching Centre for Cities. Please rate, review and subscribe if you liked what you heard. You can also follow the Centre on Twitter at Centre for Cities, or like us on LinkedIn for the latest updates on what the Centre is up to. If you have any comments on the episode or suggestions for topics we should cover in the future, we'd love to hear from you. Do tweet us or send an email to info@centreforcities.org. The music was from Palace Fires by Johnny Foreigner, used with permission, and all rights are reserved.